This episode was recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past and present, with gratitude for thousands of generations of rich culture, storytelling and song. Everybody is trying to find their way home.
You can actually hear her snoring.
Oh, should I kick her out?
Tadokura O'Connell Rapira is a Maori and Irish campaigner, organiser and facilitator.
I can maybe if you move more this way.
Poor thing.
I don't want to kick her out. But I think that will solve it.
Today we're at their home in Naarm, Melbourne, on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country.
Is that good?
Yeah, okay. That's good. That's awesome.
Poor thing.
Sorry, Dante.
Tarokuda isn't a songwriter, like the other people I've spoken to on this podcast. We've become friends through a Waiata group, fondly known as Takatapui Tuesdays. The word Takatapui is an ancient one that means an intimate friend of the same gender. It was brought back into common use by Takatapui writer, academic and activist, Professor Ngā Huiata Awakōtuku. During the 80s, Māori and queer and trans communities reclaimed it as an umbrella term for organising actions and standing together. Not everyone who's Māori and queer identifies as Takatapui, but most understand it's been a life-saving word.
He uri tēnei nō te atiawa, nā ruahine, nā te whakaue, nā puhi te rarawa. Me County Kerry ki Airangi, he Takatapui aho. I remember, you know, I've tried so many times to learn te reo, on and off since I was 13. I guess because I grew up in Aotearoa, I am the beneficiary of the fact that you can do it in high school, and that's only increasing, and gone to do like the free 10-week university courses, and each time it unlocks a little bit more of me being able to do that, but there's always been a barrier because I haven't felt fully understood in my queerness, and so having a space where you can be both queer and Māori at the same time, and we have a word for it, which is takatapui, and has come back to us as a term as well. It just helps you feel so much more understood as all the parts of who you are, and you don't have to leave a significant part of who you are at the door in order to access your culture, and that's been extraordinarily meaningful and, yeah, emotional.
Formed at the beginning of 2024. I wanted a space where we could make stronger connections in our takatāpuitanga. It's too easy to let your culture slip down to second or third on your list. So I sent a message to my queer Māori mates, inviting them to meet every Tuesday night to learn a new waiata.
Hello. Kia ora.
There's been several times when we've gathered and sung together that I was just saying, it's so beautiful. so thank you for bringing us all together. Yeah, and I think, I don't know who was the first person to have said this, but Rawiri Waititi from Te Pāti Māori kind of went viral for saying it on Instagram, where he talks about, you know, you may not know your maunga, but your maunga knows you. You may not know your awa, but your awa knows you. You may not know your whenua, but your whenua knows you. And I feel like that's what I've witnessed in this rōpū, is that even though most of the rōpū have grown up away from Aotearoa, the Aotearoa-ness, the Aotearoa-tanga, is strong, and it comes through and it shines through. And that has been a joy and a privilege to witness and walk alongside everyone in that.
Spending time with my takatapui whānau fills a need that no other space can give me. Over the year, I watch my friends go home to their marae for the first time, receive tamoko, have babies, make a commitment to their reo haerenga, and step into te ao Māori with an open heart. We started off meeting at my house, but after a couple of months, we moved into a hall, and what started as maybe 10 people has around 40 members now.
You know, I'm excited to see who the first romantic relationship is to form out of Takatapui Tuesdays. I was like, surely if you bring a bunch of queers together.
So we'll see.
So we'll see who that ends up being. But, you know, it's the kind of, like, lifelong friendships that we're all forming upon. Now, the whānau relationships, like you say, you know, it's the whakawhanaungatanga, which is the building and the nurturing and the strengthening of long-term family or kinship-like relationships and connections to one another. You know, we'll go to each other's, you know, weddings and anniversaries and birthdays and just all these significant events in each other's lives because we all just decided that we wanted to come and sing together, you know, which is so gorgeous.
Te Raukura has been described by their peers as one of the most strategic minds of their generation. For the past 14 years, they've been behind some of the biggest community-led campaigns in Aotearoa. They're currently the CEO of 350.org in so-called Australia, a global community organisation committed to a world free of fossil fuels. But the decision to leave your lands doesn't feel like one that many Indigenous activists would make lightly. So why did they move?
I was headhunted for a job. I, at that time, had been working at Action Station, which is the Aotearoa sister organisation of Get Up on these lands. And I'd been doing digital campaigning and, you know, lots of community organising for almost 7 years at that point. And I was approached to move here and do work to train young people in their activism, so camps and grants and programs that just support them to unleash their power to transform the future. And if I'm honest, the salary was like double what I was being paid in Aotearoa, and I was reaching a point in my life where I was like, wow, my parents are all, like, my dad and his siblings are all renting their homes on our stolen lands, and I was like, actually, I need to get serious about how I'm going to, you know, while I'm campaigning for land back for Indigenous peoples, maybe I can help buy some of our whānau land back as well. And so I was like, let's make some pragmatic money decisions. So I guess I'm here as an economic migrant by choice. But the other thing is that at that time, I'd finished facilitating a fellowship for activists where I saw young Māori and young Aboriginal participants in that fellowship and how much they got from being in relationship with one another. And I was like, oh, this kind of growing feeling inside me that I wanted to contribute to regional Indigenous solidarity was coming up. And then the story about the Jabwarang birthing trees and the horrible acts of Rio Tinto destroying sacred Aboriginal land kind of started crossing my newsfeed. And at that point in time in Aotearoa, we had a different government. And I was like, you know, there's very real conversations happening about how we can truly live into the treaty in the very near future. And so I was like, okay, we've got to start building this global Indigenous solidarity because none of us are free until all of us are free kind of vibe. So came over here for all of that, moved over in 2021, went into 7 months of lockdown. And yeah, have been here ever since on beautiful Wurundjeri country.
In the census that year, more than 170,000 people in Australia identified as Māori. That's 20% of all Māori. For most, the move is financial survival. The ongoing impact of colonisation means that many Māori can no longer afford to live on their own stolen lands. But the irony of living on someone else's is not lost on Te Raukura.
You know, I was a CEO, essentially equivalent of a really successful not-for-profit, and my salary was the equivalent of the lowest salary at the job that I moved over here for, in terms of like the lowest paid staff members were on that salary, you know, and so like the discrepancy is wild. But I'm also, you know, super conscious that the reason that the economy is so much stronger here is because of the mining and the fracking of Aboriginal land. I mean, that lifts so many of the wages and salaries. And so I'm also just like hyper aware that the wealth generated on this country or on this continent is stolen wealth. And I feel like more of us that come here for mahi and money need to grapple with that reality so that we can position ourselves in solidarity with Aboriginal people as we live on Aboriginal land. Our elders fought long and hard for Aotearoa, our language, to be where it is today. And I am so, so grateful to them for all the work that they've done. And when I moved here and was in lockdown for 7 months and then came out, I was really yearning for connection to other Māori because I had taken for granted just how far our language had come. Because when you're at home, you know, we've got Māori television, we've got Māori radio stations. You hear people just say kia ora to you in meetings and everyday life, and I was feeling the absence of that, and I didn't realise how much I would miss that. When I moved here, I underestimated just how much, what's the word, like incidental te reo Māori I come across. And so finding the Morako group and then the Waiata group was really important for me in terms of just a, like, I would consider it meeting a basic need that I have. And I think that as Māori living on Aboriginal land, other Indigenous people's lands, we need to hold in our minds that while we are trying to fulfill and meet our own needs for that connection, there are many of our whanaunga here, our tuakana, who do not have the pathways to access that need being fulfilled. My partner is a Larakia woman, and we talk often about how me as a Māori person, living off my whenua, off my land, can access my culture and my language here. And she, as a person, living away from her country but still on her continent, can't access Larakia language and culture and singing in the same way. And so I just think we need to hold both of those things as true. Our ancestors and our elders fought really hard for this. It's really meaningful and important for us to access our culture, and also there are other people on this continent who cannot access it in the same way. And so just, yeah, the grappling with the power and the privilege and the access, and committing ourselves to supporting the revitalisation, reawakening, reclamation movements of Aboriginal people.
For me, that's music. Over the last decade, and as I've connected more and more with my culture, my relationship with music has shifted. Or maybe more specifically, I should say, the music industry. But I've never stopped believing that culture creates change, and that's how I show up and engage with people. Not in big statements, but in all those little conversations I'm able to have. Lyrics are part of that. If I'm in your ear for 4 minutes, I want to say something meaningful. Struggles for liberation have their galvanising songs and their culture, but these are long-term fights and movements. So what else sustains them?
I think for me, I feel like a beneficiary of many of the Māori who live on Kulin lands do work really hard to be in right relationship with Kulin peoples. And so I look to, you know, the relationship between the various kapa haka groups that we're both connected to, who have really strong relationships with the Jiri Jiri dance group and perform together, do cultural exchanges together, share language with one another. And so I feel like I got to move here and see a really active Māori diasporic community who are already working to be in right relationship with Wurundjeri and other Kulin nations. And what that looks like is just turning up for one another, being in relationship, being in community with one another. And for me personally, I am a political organizer. And so I spend about a day a week volunteering my time, and I'm lucky enough to have enough freelance work that's paid to do this. And so I acknowledge I'm in a very privileged position, but I spend about a day a week volunteering for land back campaigns for Aboriginal people, because I acknowledge that land and language and ceremony and culture are all really connected, and that for Aboriginal people to be able to, you know, access language and ceremony and culture, they need their land returned to them. And so that's where I put my time and energy, because that's my particular skill set. And so I guess the thing that I would encourage our whānau who live on these lands to think about is, what is your skill and how can you offer that to be of service to the people of the lands and the land that you are on? And then how can you work with other people who have different skills and different offerings as you do that? Yeah. I think some of the social movements that I am most inspired by came together through mutual aid. And mutual aid, in the way that I understand it, is about communities who share an experience of oppression or exploitation coming together to meet each other's needs. And as takatāpui, we are coming together to meet each other's needs for a safe place to be takatāpui, a place where we don't need to explain ourselves in that way, where we can just be joyful and boisterous and laugh, but also like share our vulnerabilities and practice our reo together and sing songs and co-regulate and all of those sorts of things. And what I've really enjoyed about being part of this community is that from that mutual aid of meeting each other's needs, political organising has also grown. And so, you know, we sang together at one of the rallies in solidarity with the people of Palestine. bringing our culture to the stage as a form of resistance, acknowledging that love and resistance go hand in hand.
There's a Palestinian artist and writer called Arish Kaoud who says that resistance is the deepest form of love, and I believe that to be absolutely true.
It's an important part of any resistance movement to express our love and our culture. You know, we went to Invasion Day rally together, and so more and more we are politically organising with one another, and we're doing that all as people who are doing it in our free time as volunteers. And as a person who comes from a world of kind of paid activism and campaigning, I know that I spend so much time in meetings and gatherings and Zooms where people are talking about how do we get people to show up and do this work, and, you know, here we are doing this work with one another because we're meeting around a shared need that we have, which is to be in right relationship with this whenua, but also to be in right relationship with ourselves and our lineages and our whakapapa. And I think what I've really enjoyed is that we've created a container or a cocoon of aroha where we can hold each other in the mamai, in the soul wound of not knowing our reo, not through any fault of our own, because of course that was ripped away from us through the processes of colonization. But we have this deep, I'll speak for myself, I have this soul wound, this mamai, this deep hurt about not being able to articulate myself in the way that I know that my ancestors would have been able to just three generations ago. And so having a place where we can practice what it feels like to have our reo on our tongue in a space with other Māori, where you're not going to be judged and where you're going to be held, is a gift. It's a taonga. Yeah.
Everybody's Trying to Find Their Way Home is made by me, Jen Kloa, with Bez Zodair and John Chia. Ngā mihi nui to Te Raukura and Dante for making me so welcome at their whare. This show is made with support from Creative Australia and 3RRR 102.7 FM. You can find more information about this episode and listen to Season 1 at everybodystryingpodcast.com. And if you like this episode, share it with someone who needs to hear it. Any last thoughts, Ehua?
Be gay, do crime.